You're listening to this week's sermon from Saanich Baptist Church in Victoria. To watch the sermon online or for more resources, head to saanichbaptist.org. Have a great week.
Amen. Thanks, Ben. That is good news. Thank you so much. And really, that's a thank you to all of you, as Ben has said. And for someone who's been around here for a while and had the privilege and opportunity to sort of lead through some of that transition, this has been just an amazing 8 months. It's crazy, 8 months. Well, good morning. Are you not loving the longer nights? Hey, come on now. It's fantastic. I've entitled my sermon, my talk today, Late Night Conversations. And for Ben, what time is that? 8 o'clock? Is that a late night conversation for you? Is that about it? Come on, seriously. I remember as a teenager, and then as a parent of teenagers, what late night conversations were all about, when they happened. They always sort of happened when the kids are supposed to be going to bed, right? When I wanted to go to bed. But they were significant. They're often, you know, you would come into understanding some things, and I would begin to understand my parents a little bit better. They would start to maybe understand me a little bit better. There's something significant about late night conversation. You might find yourself with a friend at a late night happy hour. Ben, they start generally later than 8 o'clock. I don't know if you know anything about that world. No. You might go to Binfor, 9 o'clock, half price, you know, burgers. But it's, you know, oh, someone didn't know that. That is legit. That is real right there. That it was worth the price of admission, almost. But you see, there's something significant that can start to happen. I don't know what it is. And actually, when you think about spiritual formation and daily rhythms, there's a significance about that late night hour and what you may or may not engage in before you kind of close down. And this morning, we're going to pick up our story in one of those moments. The Last Supper has taken place. They've had the dinner with Jesus. They've had the conversation where Jesus is talking about how he is going to be turned over, betrayed. And of course, the disciples are challenging that. They don't want that. And why would they? Why in the world would you want someone who has done things you've never seen before, who's taught you some things in and around faith that you've never quite heard before? I mean, it had some themes and some veins, if you like, of familiarity, but there was an authority and there was a freshness and a new perspective. Why would you ever want him to go away? And Peter said it, of course. Jesus, no, I don't want you to go away. And Jesus had those famous words, "Get behind me, Satan. Stop that talk. I need to go away." And so we come upon this story. Jesus has had this communion, and as they finish the meal, you've heard it, they sung a hymn, and they dismissed, if you like. They finished, and it says they went off to the Garden of Gethsemane, Mount of Olives. And as they were going, Jesus was just continuing to talk to them and was talking about how they were going to turn on him. They may not as an individual be the one betraying Jesus, but when Jesus was betrayed and given over to the rulers and the authorities, that they were going to turn on him. And of course, Peter again said, "No, never will I." But it says also that the others all said the same. And I get that. I think that's probably the way I would be. I think by the fact that you're here on a Sunday morning of spring break on a gorgeous Sunday morning, that you would probably be in that camp as well. That would be your intention. Now, if you've got a Bible, smartphone, something with scriptures on it, we're going to look at Mark chapter 14, verses 32 to 42. Now, before I read that, I just want to say this is familiar to many of you. Truly, what we've been going through and will be going through in these 7 weeks as we head into Easter weekend is very familiar to you. Can I just ask you, could you just pause that past experience? And could you enter into a fresh opportunity for God to speak something new to you from something that is maybe old and familiar. Don't check out. Maybe for you this morning, this has just been all new to you, and you're going, you're kind of hanging on for the ride. Hey, do it. Keep hanging on. This is good stuff. There's no doubt about it. So Mark chapter 14, verses 32 to 42, they went to a place called Gethsemane. And Jesus said to a disciple, "Sit here while I pray." He took Peter, James, and John along with him, and he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death," he said to them. "Stay here and keep watch." Going a little further, he fell to the ground and prayed that if possible, the hour might pass from him. "Abba, Father," he said, "everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me, yet not what I will, but you will." Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. "Simon," he said to Peter, "are you asleep? Couldn't you keep watch for 1 hour? Watch and pray that so you'll not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak." Once more, he went away and prayed the same thing. And when he came back, he again found them sleeping because their eyes were heavy. They did not know what to say to him. Returning the third time, he said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Enough. The hour has come. Look, the Son of Man is being delivered into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer." We sang about this scene and what Jesus was starting to feel this morning. Jesus was deeply distressed, troubled, overwhelmed with sorrow, with the anticipation of his death. He was experiencing once again some of the pain of being here on earth. I love some of the words. Ben's first message when he was here back in July, I think he was sharing some of his favorite texts, and I was pleased to discover that one of his is one that has resonated with me as well. And so you're going to hear this one probably over and over again. And it's not Romans 8. That's a good one too. This one's Hebrews 2. Hebrews chapter 2. Listen to these words about Jesus who is suffering, who is distressed, who was anticipating this pain of death that was coming. And this is what's being said about Jesus. "Since the children," that's us, "have flesh and blood, he too shared in their humanity, so that by his death, he might break the power of him who holds the power of death," that is, the devil, "and free those who all their lives were held in slavery by their fear of death. For surely it is not angels he helps, but Abraham's descendants, us. For this reason, he had to be made like them, fully human in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God, and that he might make atonement for the sins of the people. Because he himself suffered when he was tempted, he is able to help those," us, "who are being tempted." It's an amazing thing that our God did not consider equality with God something to be held on to, but chose to set that aside that he might live for us in all of life, in all the experience that we as well, that he might be able to empathize with us, to be there for us. All right, back to the story. Jesus asked his disciples, could you stay and could you keep watch? He then went a little further, and as you know, just in hearing the story, he took not just the 12, but then he took the three along a little bit further along, and he said, "Please keep watch, you know, pray, be aware." And did you notice what then happened? Jesus went along and he collapsed. He just collapsed. Jesus was well beyond any formal ceremony, any, you know, I don't know, looking good, he was willing to just collapse to the ground. He was distressed. It was hard. Luke, and you guys, you may or may not know this, you've probably heard it, but it may not have clicked with you, but one of the gospel writers, Luke, was a doctor. Dr. Luke. In his story, he tells us that the sweat that Jesus was sweating were like teardrops of blood. Like the agony was that severe. And if you want to Google it, it's some H word. It's a legit thing. I didn't understand it. But Jesus was facing some tragically hard moments. Now, if that's not hard enough to understand, then we walk into this next verse. And there's some deep mystery in what we discover here. And it's in verse 36, and it's Abba, Father. Everything is possible for you. Now, I think that's a statement that Jesus could say, right? Like for sure, disciples actually could witness that. We've seen some crazy things go on. Some things that he's done, it's unbelievable. Everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me. Can you believe Jesus said that? I mean, that tells you how hard this was. Please, Father. Some other way. Listen, I know you can do all kinds of things. It's crazy. Some other way, please. And again, I kind of want to go in. Doesn't that seem like a reasonable request? See, I can imagine a request going out on the prayer chain. Urgent. Jesus is saying crazy stuff. He's talking about possibly being betrayed and being killed. I think we need to pray to the Father in heaven and say, Abba, Father, everything's possible for you. Take this cup from Jesus. I would have been on that prayer. Don't you think you would have been? Makes sense. It does. Jesus is struggling. He's talking about his imminent death. And yet he's recognizing and trying to understand that it's better. Then there's this tiny little word, three letters, pivotal, transitional thing that some of you were aware was coming. Yet. Father, take this from me, please. Everything's possible for you. Yet. Not what I will, but what you will. Not my will be done, but your will be done. Folks, there is so much going on here. I mean, the humility of Jesus. The deference to his Father. His willingness to allow the humanity that he created to surrender himself to their judgment. This is crazy. This is unbelievable. Jesus demonstrated incredible courage in such a vulnerable and desperate place. Now, none of us are going to be asked to go and to die for the sins of the world, to die and to defeat the works of the enemy, to completely change the reality of life. We're not going to be asked to do that, but here's the thing that I do know. There are times where I don't know what the will of the Father is. I'm not sure. But I've got a plan, and I got a plan, and it starts with, hey, God, everything's possible for you. How about we do this? Makes sense to me. I can see how this would work and this would work and this would work, and I could build a great plan. But when I do maybe find myself in the Romans chapter 8, there's this really amazing section that as I have grown older and as I have found myself in rooms and places and conversations with people, that I've had to lean on this teaching in Romans 8, and it's around the prayer of others. It's around the not being sure, what is God doing? What is to take place? It's in some desperate situation where you just don't know what to do. And it tells us, it's such a beautiful thing that the Spirit of God will intercede in those moments where we're just not sure. God, I don't know. I mean, everything's possible for you. And I'm going to pray for healing, or I'm going to pray for this, or I'm going to pray in this way. But yet, if I've got it wrong, if I just don't understand, if I'm not reading the tea leaves right, your will be done. And that is an incredibly powerful, courageous, humility-riddled statement.